Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritas. Today is Tuesday, June 8th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. Title of today's podcast, Infrastructure Roadblocks. So this is going to be multifaceted here. We have a breakdown in the discussions between the Republicans and the White House with their recent ongoing talks, of course, related to infrastructure. This is just a temporary hurdle, a temporary roadblock as far as I'm concerned. Markets are near all-time highs. Let's wait and see if there's any type of pullback, of any type of concern, and we will see Congress rush to pass some form of infrastructure spending so fast, it'll make your head spin. But we're not there yet from a market pressure standpoint. But if that day should occur, don't worry about it. They're going to pass something. And as I stated, this is just going to be temporary. Other Republicans will end up leading the conversation with the White House. Something is going to be passed. Because in all honesty, while I'm not for all of this reckless spending, far from it, infrastructure is actually needed in this country because it has been neglected for so very long. Now, it's not the type of quote-unquote stimulus that politicians on both sides of the aisle would like to have us believe, because it is not stimulative in nature. It is an investment in nature, and investments do not pay dividends overnight. They take time. So if you're going to start rebuilding roads and bridges, you're going to have some slowdown to your daily commute temporarily while that construction is underway. The whole purpose being that after the construction is completed, you are now able to get to work more quickly, more safely, move goods and services and people more efficiently and effectively. That is the end goal of infrastructure. But in the process of that construction, well, hey, you used to have 3 lanes in a highway. Now you're down to 2. Now you're down to 1. You used to go 70 miles an hour. Now you're down to 50, 45, 30 miles an hour. Who knows, depending on what type of construction you're doing, where you're at. That slows down the process. But if it's done properly on the other side of it, it can pay dividends. It doesn't mean that it will, but that is the intended goal. And of course, that all comes into play as to how well the government can, one, pass the legislation, and then how well various construction firms are able to complete the construction. Given various types of red tape, bureaucratic messes, this, that, and the other. So there's still a long way to go with this, but it's still needed. We received the report card from the ASCE, the American Society of Civil Engineers. We went through that report when it came out a handful of months ago. Can't even remember, it's been so long. And that's something that we're going to come back to here momentarily when we get to another talking point of infrastructure-related news that's been breaking this week as well, and that's with respect to the Colonial Pipeline situation. Because, lo and behold, the FBI has been able to recover about $2.3 million worth of Bitcoin that Colonial Pipeline paid out in ransom to that hacking group. Okay, now, of course, this is somewhat contradictory to what you'll hear from some advocates and supporters of Bitcoin, where this type of seizure is almost an impossibility. Bitcoin is decentralized, man. It gets around the government, man. They can't seize it. They can't take it. They can't regulate it, man. Well, it looks like the FBI got their hands on it. So how are they going to explain this one? So all of the arguments from people who are supporting Bitcoin at any cost, for any reason, are just continuing to fall by the wayside one by one. And with it, the price. And we're going to get to market performance here momentarily. But that's something to be very mindful of, because we are seeing these types of news stories, but also real life events with this type of infrastructure breakdown, where you have the largest pipeline on the East Coast that is supplying fuel being shut down for several days, having to pay a ransom. Now, earlier this morning, we have an internet outage, and we'll get to an article on that bringing down some of the largest websites around the globe. So we're picking up here. We should be noticing a trend that something is not right. Something does not smell right to me here, ladies and gentlemen. We obviously have the pandemic and everything that has transpired over the past year and a half and continues to take place. We have these shutdowns of the pipelines, whether that's from President Joe Biden halting the construction of the Keystone Pipeline, whether it's that nut job in Detroit, Governor Whitmer wanting to shut down that pipeline, which is on hold right now, but she still may be able to do it. If some laws are passed, she may be able to do it. Now, let's hope that's not the case, because that will affect a lot of people in the Midwest here in the United States. And, of course, it'll impact Canada as well. And Canada doesn't want that pipeline to be shut down. They didn't want the Keystone Pipeline to be shut down either. But that occurred. But that's another story. We'll get to that later. But just something to be mindful of. Now we have the internet outage. So what's going on? Is this just like a lot of beta testing behind the scenes with some powers that be or something? Because it just doesn't smell right to me. And again, we'll get to that article here momentarily. And then another article I want to get to is with respect to inflation. And this one is a recent analysis released by Deutsche Bank stating that inflation is a ticking time bomb. Well, don't you think? I mean, I'm glad that Deutsche Bank and their economic team has come out with this warning, but where have they been? I mean, I've been discussing this for well over a year. And now this is just finally getting some mainstream attention here, some traction. Now, there's a lot of pushback from a lot of other Wall Street banks, but that's because it's in their interest to push back. It's in the interest of a lot of these Wall Street banks and their economic teams to continue to believe the Federal Reserve, to not fight the Fed, because these guys are making money hand over fist. They don't want the gravy train to stop. They don't want interest rates to go up. They want to believe. They want to believe that the Federal Reserve is correct, that inflation is just going to be transitory, that it's just because of some supply chain disruptions, that it's just because of base effects, because of how low numbers were during 2020 because of the pandemic, because of the lockdowns and restrictions. They don't want to admit, even if they believe behind closed doors, in their real one-on-one conversations with each other, amongst themselves, they're not going to admit that inflation is a problem because it's not in their self-interest. Because they know, as well as we know here at the Capital News, that as soon as these interest rates go up, and by a considerable degree, and in this day and age, a considerable degree of an increase to an interest rate could be 1 percentage point, 100 basis points, and that's lights out for the market. This isn't conjecture. We witnessed this during the fourth quarter of 2018 when the Federal Reserve was tapering, when they were rolling off their balance sheet, attempting to quote-unquote normalize their balance sheet. Well, newsflash for you folks, that was a balance sheet that was got to about $3.6 trillion. We're double that now. We couldn't handle it in the fourth quarter of 2018 when we were told every single day by President Trump and Larry Kudlow and Steven Mnuchin and his entire economic team that the economy was never better. We couldn't tolerate a balance sheet that went down to slightly below $4 trillion. We couldn't handle a federal funds rate of 2.25%. The 10-year note at about 3.33%. Couldn't tolerate it. That was supposedly in the best of times. How are we going to tolerate an interest rate of 2% now? At a 10-year at 3.33%. We're not. It's not going to happen. It'll be lights out for the markets. They know this. They just don't want to admit it because it's not in their interest to do so. They don't care about you and me. I do. That's why I say these things, because I'm not concerned about how it looks, politically speaking, whether it favors the Republicans or the Democrats, whether it favors Wall Street or Main Street. I'm here to give it to you straight, so you can digest the information and act accordingly. But these jokers, it's all for themselves. And that should be perfectly evident by now. So I want to get to that article too, because I think there's some interesting information in it, and you get to see some of the pushback from some of those other leading Wall Street banks. So market performance overnight, we have the dollar index at 90.08, little changed at the current moment. Bitcoin continues its decline, currently at $32,900 per coin. So just getting shellacked. And we had all-time highs not too long ago at about $65,000 to $68,000 per coin. Again, $32,800 per Bitcoin at the moment. Overnight futures, the U.S. exchanges are all relatively flat at the moment. Cash trade in Japan is giving back about 0.3%, a mixed bag across the pond today in Europe. The cash trade in Australia also in the red, giving back about 0.1%. Chinese stocks currently up slightly in the green. On the commodity price front, we have WTI at $70.52 a barrel. But hey, folks, there's no inflation. You don't have to worry about it. There's nothing to see here. But WTI, $70.52 a barrel. Brent, $72.68. Natural gas, $3.13. Gasoline, $2.23. Gold and silver hanging on. We got gold at $1,894 per ounce. Silver at $27.70 per ounce. Copper's at $4.53 a pound. Lumber continues its decline, giving back over 4% today, almost 4.5% to trade at $1,167 per 1,000 linear board feet. Okay, so lumber has pulled back significantly from its all-time highs. We're at a correction here, probably about 30%, somewhere around there, give or take. So we have seen these types of pullbacks over the past several months to this degree. And will this continue downward? It very well could. It very well could. As I always say here, nothing goes straight up, nothing goes straight down. And we have seen, again, these types of corrections. And then it went on to make that all-time high. But this is still, because it has been so volatile, prices are going to remain somewhat sticky out there in the broader markets, because home builders and other construction firms, they aren't just going to say, oh, well, the price went down, so we're just going to cut our prices immediately, because who knows what's going to happen tomorrow? Are they able to truly lock in any type of pricing? Okay, so those are the types of questions you have to ask yourself, and we have to wonder, because it's obviously having a major toll right now on the housing market. Now, it's hard to notice that in some parts, because housing prices continue to go higher. But we're starting to see a little bit of a cooling off phase. Now, we'll see how long this lasts, but this is to be understood and respected, I think. You got to respect it, because it could turn into something bigger if it should continue. Because people don't have the money. They can't afford this. They can't afford to build a new home when just the price of lumber is adding an additional $36,000 to that cost alone, just for the lumber. What about copper? What about drywall? What about other construction and building material costs? Okay? They can't afford it. People can't afford it. Low interest rates, low mortgage rates, can't afford it. This is a problem. This is perhaps the system reaching a point of exhaustion, which I think is probably one of the most likely ways that this all comes crashing down, is because of system exhaustion. Just can't take anymore. Now, there, of course, could be some major geopolitical event that could turn into a cluster. That's most definitely a possibility. But I think it's most likely going to be system exhaustion. But a geopolitical cluster, if you will, could get the blame. It could happen, quote-unquote, coincidentally with a point of system exhaustion or something else. And we've been talking about that blame game sort of being set up on the global scale, where one country after the next, if you read between the lines, is starting to form an alliance, starting to get out there with some of their propaganda to start blaming somebody else. The Chinese want to blame us, the Europeans, we want to blame the Chinese, etc., etc. So the stage is set. It's just a question of what gets pushed first, because the dominoes are up. Which one gets knocked down first, because the rest of them are going to follow suit. All right. So that's some of the market performance, and we'll round it out with Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note at 1.53%. On the lower end here, but still range-bound nonetheless as to where we have been over the past few months. And then lastly, we have the World Bank increasing their global growth forecast. The world economy is expected to grow by 5.6% this year, up from a 4.1% expansion projected back in January. So that is quite the increase. And this, I'm going to have to call BS on this one because of the size of this increase. Again, 5.6% from a projected 4.1% back in January. This is all about the narrative. This is all about the con game. This is not economic growth. This is inflation from one central bank and one federal government after the next. So that's a good segue right now to take us to that Deutsche Bank story. This one is out of CNBC, but many other news outlets were covering this as well. So Deutsche Bank warns of global time bomb coming due to rising inflation. So inflation may look like a problem that will go away, but is more likely to persist and lead to a crisis in the years ahead, according to a warning from Deutsche Bank economists. In a forecast that is well outside the consensus from policymakers and Wall Street, Deutsche issued a dire warning that focusing on stimulus while dismissing inflation fears will prove to be a mistake, if not in the near term, then in 2023 and beyond. And of course, my analysis is forecasting that inflation is going to be a structural problem, meaning it is going to be with us for the next several years, quite possibly throughout the remaining decade here. The analysis especially points the finger at the Federal Reserve and its new framework in which it will tolerate higher inflation for the sake of a full and inclusive recovery. This is nonsense, but that's why they're calling this out, thankfully. The firm contends that the Fed's intention to not tighten policy until inflation shows a sustained rise will have dire impacts. The consequence of delay will be greater disruption of economic and financial activity than would be otherwise the case when the Fed finally does act. This is according to Deutsche's chief economist. In turn, this could create a significant recession and set off a chain of financial distress around the globe, particularly in emerging markets. Why emerging markets? Probably because they're still the weakest links in the chain. And inflation is going to disproportionately impact the weakest, and that's just how it's going to play out. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's inflation is a tax, and it disproportionately affects the weak and the poor. As part of its approach to inflation, the Fed won't raise interest rates or curtail its asset purchase program until it sees substantial further progress, whatever that means, towards its inclusive goals. Multiple central bank officials have said that they are not near those objectives. And of course, last week they come out and start, and now they want to, you know, start tackling climate change. So they're just always going to continue to move the goalpost. In the meantime, indicators such as the consumer price and personal consumption expenditure price indices are well above the Fed's 2% inflation goal. Policymakers say the current rise in inflation is temporary and will abate once supply disruptions and base effects from the early months of the coronavirus pandemic crisis wear off. The Deutsche team disagrees, saying that aggressive stimulus and fundamental economic changes will present inflation ahead that the Fed will be ill-prepared to address. It will take a year longer until 2023, but inflation will reemerge. And while it is admirable that this patience is due to the fact that the Fed's priority are shifting towards social goals, neglecting inflation leaves global economies sitting on a time bomb. The effects will be devastating, particularly for the most vulnerable in society, according to Deutsche Bank. And most on the street see tame inflation. To be sure, the Deutsche position is not widely held by economists. Most on Wall Street agree with the Fed's view that current inflation pressures are transitory, and they doubt there will be any policy changes soon, because they don't want there to be any policy changes soon. They are making more money than they've ever made before because of this gravy train. They don't want this to stop. They want inflation to, quote unquote, be transitory. They don't want any change to this economic quagmire of a policy that they got running here. Jan Hatzius, the chief economist out of Goldman, said that there are strong reasons to support that position. One, he cites, is the likelihood that the expiration of enhanced unemployment benefits will send workers back to their jobs in the coming months, easing wage pressures. On price pressures in general, the Goldman economist said that much of the current spike is being driven by the unprecedented rule of outliers that will ebb and bring levels back closer to normal. I don't believe that these outliers are going to be ending anytime soon. Of course, I could be wrong about that, but I don't think so. He continues, all this suggests that Fed officials can stick with their plan to exit only very gradually from the easy current policy stance. You mean like leaving the $14 billion, tapering that $14 billion in corporate debt holdings that they have that they announced recently. That it's going to take them till the end of the year, perhaps even longer, to just taper that $14 billion in corporate debt holdings. Meanwhile, last week, the Federal Reserve's balance sheet hits an all-time high and increases on a week-over-week basis by $32 billion. So you do the math. What a joke this all is. Continuing with the article, that will be a mistake, according to the Deutsche view. So Deutsche Bank and Goldman Sachs and clearly many of the other major banks on Wall Street are at odds here. Congress has approved more than $5 trillion in pandemic-related stimulus so far, and the Fed has nearly doubled its balance sheet through monthly asset purchases to just shy of $8 trillion. The stimulus continues to come through, even with an economy that is expected to grow at about a 10 percentage point pace in the second quarter. And an employment picture that has added an average 478,000 jobs per month in 2021. Quote, never before have we seen such coordinated expansionary fiscal and monetary policy. This will continue as output moves above potential. This is why this time is different for inflation, end quote, according to the economists out of Deutsche Bank. The Deutsche Bank team said the coming inflation could resemble the 1970s experience, a decade during which inflation averaged nearly 7% and was well into double digits at various time points. Soaring food and energy prices, along with the end of price controls, helped push that era's soaring inflation. Then, Fed Chairman Paul Volcker led the effect to squash inflation then, but needed to use dramatic interest rate hikes that triggered a recession. The Deutsche team worries that such a scenario could play out once again. They continue saying, quote, already many sources of rising prices are filtering through into the U.S. economy. Even if they are transitory on paper, they may feed into expectations, just as they did in the 1970s. They continue, the risk then is that even if they are only embedded for a few months, they may be difficult to contain, especially with stimulus so high. The firm said interest rate hikes could cause havoc in a debt-heavy world. Ain't that an understatement? That interest rate hikes could cause havoc in a debt-heavy world. It'll bring the whole system down. That's how fragile the entire system is. I'm telling you, we couldn't handle 2.25% in the fourth quarter of 2018, there's no way we're getting back to that on a Fed funds rate now. The whole system will completely implode. That's how fragile this all is. You have to understand that. That's why I stress this point all the time. That's why you have to be diversified and you have to be vigilant. That's my send-off. I always say it because you have to be. Because these people aren't looking out for you. They do not care about you. And we have, you know, right now, just in the United States, I have 28 trillion pieces of evidence saying that they don't care about you. And now we got Demented Joe and his crack economic team that want to come out and put a budget of $6 trillion out to us. They don't even care anymore. $6 trillion, that's going to leave us with a $2 trillion deficit out of the gate, if not more than that, right out of the gate. And what will be their answer? Oh, well, we've cut the budget deficit by a couple trillion dollars because we've been running $4 trillion deficits for the past year and a half, and probably going to be 2 years because we're probably going to hit another $4 trillion this year. So that'll be the funny Washington, D.C. math, the argument that is made. Well, yeah, I mean, it's a big deficit, but we cut it in half. Oh, fantastic. That'll be the excuse. Now, real quickly here, with respect to the Colonial Pipeline shutdown, because we have the CEO who was making some comments before Congress today. And one of them that sort of caught my attention was how the CEO mentioned that there are mechanical processes in place for which they could operate their pipeline. And one would think that that would sort of be a failsafe, that you don't want to be, you know, so dependent on the quote-unquote grid. You don't want to be so dependent that a hacking group can shut you down, that there should be some sort of mechanical process in place if there is some type of hack or some other type of electrical failure. Okay, so you can't get your electrical systems up, but that's okay. We can still move gas through this pipeline via various mechanical processes. Well, that's the case. They can, but there's a problem. They don't have the personnel to do it. Okay, you get that? And the reason is because those employees that know how to do that, well, they're retired or they're dead. Okay, that is a crucial point to make. And this was noted, and we highlighted this from that report card from the American Society of Civil Engineers, if you recall our reporting on that a couple few months ago, whenever that was. Because with respect to, I believe in that report, it was mentioning wastewater treatment facility plants and the like, that there is a concern because a lot of those employees are in their upper 50s. So these people are nearing retirement, and there are not a lot of young people who are coming behind them to take over. So if we don't have people within these crucial positions, you can understand where this is headed. Now, that doesn't mean that that's going to happen. Maybe people will change their minds. Maybe there's going to be, you know, big compensation incentives to attract younger people to these jobs because there's just going to be so much demand for them because this is critical infrastructure. You need people in these positions. Okay, so that's going to be a concern for another day, but it's something that is going to have to be dealt with sooner rather than later. And of course, typically speaking, we don't act in a very proactive manner in this country or most anywhere else for that matter. It usually has to blow up. It has to turn into a cluster before we actually respond. So it becomes reactive as opposed to proactive. But that's just something that we're going to still have to contend with moving down the line. Okay. And another point of concern is a lot of these weather anomalies. There's a drought in many parts of the globe, here in the West Coast, down in Brazil, Northern Africa. But one of the reasons why I'm pointing out Brazil and parts of the West Coast here in the U.S. is because there is a lot of power generation that comes from water. We have hydroelectricity. So if you have reservoirs that are drying up, riverbeds, lakes that are drying up because of this drought, you can see the problems that could unravel. Not just from the energy standpoint, but also from an agricultural standpoint. Because it's one thing to not get rain somewhere, but if you have irrigation because you're getting rain somewhere else, okay. Well, they're not getting rain anywhere. And when we're talking about global food prices continuing to increase, you can see how this is becoming a compounding problem. And finally, we're seeing mainstream media starting to report about these massive increases to global food prices, how we're getting back to levels that we have not seen since 2011, which of course is when we witnessed the Arab Spring and other nations around the globe protesting, rioting, Well, we're going to continue to see that in many places around the world. We already are. So these geopolitical concerns, as far as I'm concerned, have not been appropriately priced into the markets, because as Goldman Sachs and company are concerned, they don't need to worry about them, because as long as the Fed can continue to print money, all of this other stuff is just nonsense. It's just noise. And for the time being, they are proving correct. But one day the music's going to stop and it's not going to be a pretty picture. And that's exactly what the ticking time bomb is in relation to from that analysis out of Deutsche. But you want the news first, you come to the Capital News, because we've been talking about this for well over a year. And then lastly, before I send off here, this is out of The Guardian. And again, you could find many articles on this as well. But this is the major internet outage shows infrastructure needs urgent fixing. Experts say outage shows internet services too centralized and lack resilience. Well, that's not what you want to hear now, is it? One of the world's biggest web outages should act as a wake-up call that internet infrastructure has become dangerously over-centralized and lacks resilience, according to security experts. An unexplained configuration error at a single infrastructure provider, Fastly, F-A-S-T-L-Y, Fastly, which handles 10% of the world's internet traffic, was enough to render major websites and services inoperable for almost an hour on Tuesday morning. Online businesses including Reddit, Amazon, Twitch, Spotify, and Hulu were knocked offline, as was The Guardian's website, the BBC, The New York Times, and CNN. National governments were also caught up, including gov.uk was unavailable, making a host of government services inaccessible, including the COVID vaccine's booking site, as was the website for the White House. The affected sites all used Fastly as a content delivery network, or a CDN, content delivery network, a service intended to provide greater reliability and performance for heavily trafficked websites. A CDN is a global network of servers placed so that at least one server is close enough for a fast connection wherever a user lives. Customers like The Guardian send visitors to the CDN rather than their own servers, providing the content faster and protecting the website from being overloaded in the event of a spike in traffic. But a CDN can also serve as a single point of failure. If the network collapses, it can also block all traffic going to the website it protects. CDNs are more efficient the larger they are, creating a concentration of power to the market. The vast majority of internet traffic is routed through one of three CDNs, Fastly, Cloudflare, or Amazon's CloudFront. Okay, so that's just talking about the concentration. Of course, it's all about consolidation, folks. How many times do I have to mention this over and over and over again? The pandemic, we got to see what consolidation was all about. Small business, you're non-essential. Sure, you sell or offer the same goods and services of larger organizations, big box stores. Too bad. You lose, you're small, the big box stores can remain open. Hell, Federal Reserve will even buy up their debt too. We'll even buy up their debt. Low interest rates. Don't worry about it. You want the money just to sit on it? You want to buy back your shares? Do what you want. We're going to keep you alive. Small businesses, see you later. We'll tell you that we're going to authorize $600 billion in a Main Street lending facility program, but we're only going to give out a handful of it. What a joke. It's all in our face. And nobody does anything. Nobody says a word. Nobody pushes back. All about consolidation. Same thing here with the internet. So something doesn't smell right to me. One pipeline after the next going down or being discussed about going down. Internet outages, pandemic, whole thing stinks. So pay attention. These are infrastructure roadblocks to be certain. When it comes to the legislation, it will be passed. It's just a matter of time. You want to see it passed quickly? Watch the markets sell off. There you have it. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.